Welcome back to the Running on Purpose podcast, a podcast dedicated to training the body, the mind, and the soul for what the race requires. My name's Steve, and I am, in this episode, one of your co-hosts, because this is the series we call the Inner Work Dialogues that I do with Kobe of the In the Zone podcast. We co-produce and then also co-release these on our separate channels for folks who may not play in both spaces. And these inner work dialogues are focused primarily on what you might call the inner game of running, or maybe the varieties of inner or spiritual experience, to sort of crib from the great William James. And it's a space that I feel like we really need to consider and appreciate. In fact, it's one of my missions in my running and coaching and public space of life. I feel like we really do need to think a little bit more, in the words of Michael and I from the Keep Going podcast, how we can steal the culture. And one of the ways I feel like is important to keep that in mind is to think about what we might call an inner experience of our running, and how we might experience running outside of just goals and times and races and things of that nature. And so here we, Kobe and I have spent, this is our third version of this, and we are kind of rolling around and figuring out where we're going. And in this particular episode, I feel like we really are getting pretty deep. So I'll let you guys determine how that's working. So in speaking of the varieties of inner experience that some might call spiritual, we really focus in this episode on how they impact our training and racing. And we're exploring the concept of goallessness here, or framing one's running experience without the typical overriding focus on goals and outcomes. Many of you who have been following me in my various podcast places, or who I'm coaching or have been working with me directly, you know this is something that's been really important to me. We'll use Kobe's recent training experiences and his recent focus away from those outcomes and moving towards process. And we dive into some of my very favorite topics in this episode, like the importance of varied racing and training experiences to become a more complete runner, how process can open up much greater fitness, how running is a path with heart, and various other modes of appreciating how limiting goals and expectations can be in our training and racing experiences. So I hope you enjoy this episode that I call On Goallessness and Process. Godspeed, my friends. Godspeed.
Cool. We're live and we're chatting with Steve again. It's been a while since we last talked. I honestly must have been, it was last year, right?
It's been a long time. Way too long.
Yeah. Yeah. We still have the intention of doing it like once a month, but we're still practicing to get in that rhythm. So
throws curveballs, especially around the holidays. You know what I mean? Like, things just get crazy, and New Year and those things. But I'm really glad to be back with you, and I'm excited about our topic this week. It's I think it'll be really useful across both of our listener bases. And I'm sure we'll talk around spiritual type things, but this one's a little more grounded and practical, I think.
Yeah. I think it's also a practice that's really good for me, just to practice grounding these principles we're talking about, because in the end, that's where it all manifests, all these spiritual conceptual things. And it's like a very accessible topic, and I'm really, really curious to explore it together today.
Cool. Well, we'll just jump in. So the idea I had here is around just the only way I know you, Kobe, is through Instagram and our conversations. So, which is, you know, one of those things when we tend, especially people of my generation, Gen X, have a tendency to sort of poo-poo the social medias. But yet, here we have ways that two people who don't know each other particularly well. We've never met face to face, but yet we're able to have these interesting conversations because we kind of vibe on the same things. But I noticed in yours that, you know, a couple of months ago you were running forever on the Pacific Crest Trail, and then the next, what I saw more recently was you tooling around on an indoor bank track. And I was like, something's changing here for Kobe from his running perspective. Like, what's going on here? This is a very different Kobe than the one I am used to seeing on Instagram. I'm sure you're exactly the same person, but you know what I'm saying. It's like, okay, there's a shift here, and that's not a small shift. As someone who has been in this industry for a very long time, and I have been on extended long trail runs. I've run the Colorado Trail. Never done Pacific Crest Trail, but I've run the Colorado Trail. And then also have done, I was a collegiate and pro athlete and ran lots of runs on indoor tracks. So what's going on here? So what is this transition? And with this transition, you're going to be, if you're going to be doing something like track work consistently enough to take a photo, then you're moving from a direction of sort of open, fluid process kind of intentions, or how you're kind of thinking about what you're doing. It has to stay wide open on the trails, especially for extended long runs. You cannot... Having clear objectives makes it a little bit more challenging. But when you're doing something like a 3K race on a track, indoor track, or a 5K race or a road race, you're now coming into a much more organized and usually something that requires a little bit more real focus on an outcome in some way, right? That there's going to be some kind of outcome. Generally, most people go from process to outcome when they move from open-ended trail running to more focused intention on a specific race. Just because the culture we live in, Kobe, is a culture of winning, of achieving, of getting over on something, of winning, if you want to say. And yet I'm really curious, because the last few times we've talked, you were definitely not in that kind of mode. So what's going on here? Help me see, are you jettisoning process sort of as a focus and moving towards goal? Or are you trying to do this in a way that's more goal? How are you starting to kind of conceive of this from your perspective? And then wherever you go with that, I'm pretty confident that we're going to have the ability to that ground that for anybody else that might be listening.
Well, I think this also speaks to the fact that you got to know me more so after my the marathons that I ran. So I've always combined the two. I've always been an avid marathon runner. In spring, and then I went to running trails more so in the summer and later on the year. So I've always kind of went back and forth between the two. It just so happens that my last marathon has been a while now. So I mean, it's not that I've never done the I would say shorter stuff in terms of the marathon compared to the PCT, but obviously marathon is not all that short. But it was also just because I happened to be in Girona, and there's just a crazy awesome group out there, and we were just smashing track sessions together. And honestly, that really plays more into where I'm currently at, how I relate to goals, how I relate to process. And so the mindset or the vibe that I really had while being in Girona was one of reconnecting to my joy for running. And it's something that I easily lose when I come with goals first. It's like you get excited about a goal and then you immediately conclude, so now I have to for sure train for this goal. While usually there's like the fact that you get excited about it is one aspect of it, and there's more layers that you can uncover, which are good to uncover before you commit to train for that goal. So, And recently I don't even have these kinds of goals. So that was a strange period for me, and which is why it was so important for me to just reconnect to that joyful running and accept in whichever way or form it's it came. So it just so happened to be that in Girona we did a beautiful mix of just flat workouts on some gravel. We did uphill workouts. We did some easy runs. We went to the track. It was just a very playful way for me to re-engage with running, to just reconnect with my body, reconnect with the community. And it just felt very, very nourishing. And that's really, there's really nothing more to it. I wasn't expecting anything out of it. I wasn't trying to get somewhere. It was just me being out there, just embracing running for what it is to me in that moment. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, when you're in those spaces, I wish more people would recognize that these domains or modes of running are not, they're only discrete in the ways that we think about competition, but they're not discrete or individual in the experience of running. I wish more marathoners would run shorter distance races and longer trail runs. I wish short distance 1500 meter, 800 meter runners would extend into cross country and then maybe even consider 10K, 15K, 20K trail events, which are there and available in a lot of different places, that someone would recognize that the track doesn't need to be something that they're afraid of, right? Why do we need to? Some people are, they go to the marathon and they get on a track and they get fear. There's a fear base there. They might do something wrong. They're on a stage. And there's a lot of different reasons why somebody might have those kinds of experiences. What are these different modes? All of these different modes, they're unbelievably different, and they allow us to have a more varied experience. And running on a trail is really amazing. And running on a trail for extended windows of time opens up a particular perceptual awareness that is incredibly valuable and useful. And it's so opposite of our day-to-day workaday world that it's really valuable. But then people get lost in that and they think, oh, this is my discipline. It's like, fuck discipline. Seriously. Like, let's just run fluidly and openly. Whether it's running in an 800 meter race and then doing some training around that to try to pop into that and see what you can do, or it's running a 100K race. I mean, the way I coach my athletes, I think that they're going to be ready to run both of those. Now, they're not going to run those fringes well. They're not going to run 100K well if they don't get specific, and they're not going to run an 800 well if they don't get specific. But somewhere between 10K and a marathon and 50K, and maybe even up to 50 miles. I mean, I coach 50 milers. Even my 100 mile folks that I coach, they do track work. But I don't understand why in our culture there seems to be these sort of, everybody's got to, you gotta stick to what you're doing. It's like, no, like, we should be able to do it all. I mean, really, we should be able to do it all. And why not? Because as you said, what an open, joyful, fluid experience you can have. And it sort of keeps you from getting into that myopic place of over-obsession around one key metric, when really that's not what we're really shooting for or trying to get, I don't think. So I think that's great. So what you're saying to me is, Steve, I'm not moving on to goals. I'm just trying to have an open, fluid, cool relationship to see whatever comes up next. But are you targeting anything? Do you have anything on the horizon? Because that might be interesting then to say, for someone who's been really process and focused, are you bringing in competitive opportunity, or are you going to stay in this space of fluid flexibility with your training and leaving it open that way?
Yeah, I currently don't have goals. And this is also the first time for me in like 5 years that I don't have any of those popping up spontaneously. There's just none of those where I feel like grit and hunger and like something to put my teeth into. So that's been a journey for me to accept, because it feels quite unsettling. It's like a couple of years ago, I was secretly dreaming when I was aiming for my sub 220 goal. I was like, when I hit that sub 220 goal, then yeah, I have to shoot for like a sub 210, right? Mm-hmm. And then somewhere along the road, I was like, that just stopped or lost its appeal, and I felt relieved because of it. So it's also like, not having a goal right now feels like I'm just giving up on some of those dreams, even though right now they just don't feel like dreams to me. I don't know, they don't feel like my dreams. They feel like, oh, I have to tick off this thing so that I can then do what I really want to do. And so, that's just not how I just no longer want to approach my running, my goals, my life in general that way. I mean, the process of exploring that goal has taught me that that goal is probably not as important to me as I thought it was. But in any case, it's still uncomfortable not having anything specific right now. Even though I definitely feel that that's not even a fair way to put it, because I seem to have a lot of connection with just very specific parts of the training process right now. Like, I've never explored strength training. Like, I've always been like, oh, I don't like that. What's the point? I seem to be quite fast without doing it, so I just don't need to get into it. But now I really start to notice that I just want to have a different experience of running in the mountains. And what I'm noticing when I'm just training here in Belgium, where there's basically no elevation, that if I don't get creative about building up strength in my legs, then it's likely that, and I'm not moving. I mean, I can move to Chamonix or any other place, but I'm not going to do that. I notice that I just want to live in Belgium and travel to those places every now and then. But so that means that, excuse me, I'm going to have to get creative about putting strength in those legs. And that's something I'm really excited about. So it's like, okay, so this feels like a string I have to like kind of pull, which is to me a goal, honestly.
No, I'm going to tell you right now, from my perspective, kind of goal, then. Yes, your goal is to have a robust and varied and useful running practice. I mean, people, this is something I've been preaching a lot over a long window of time, and it takes people breaking up with their running experience in some kind of way, of having some kind of existential shift that happens within the running context that makes them say, this doesn't work for me anymore, and I don't know why. But I just want to say, Kobe, so few people have the courage to actually step into the unknown, because you're so goal-oriented, our cultures are so goal-oriented, that it's scary. So I just want any of our listeners to recognize and hold space for you in that regard, not for you, Kobe, the human being, but maybe for their own fears. I was just hanging out with some of my athletes that I work with. One of them had a birthday party and we were at a pub having a few drinks. And, you know, one of the athletes asked me, we just went through an Olympic trial cycle, right? And one of the athletes asked me, if I'm looking at, I really want to make the Olympic team, not the Olympic team, but the Olympic trials in 4 years, what do I do now? And what I said to her was, you need to look at 4 years. Now is irrelevant. 4 years is the bigger picture. And can you disattach from the goal-oriented, so next, you know, there's a local 10K that everybody wants to run, and then they want to run a marathon in the fall, and then they want to run a marathon in the spring, and then they want to run a marathon in the fall. And I'm like, where are you working on the core essentials of running, the practice of running? If you don't work on those things, your hyper-focus on a goal will decimate your base. And these are just physiological. We're not even talking about the psychological components. But physiologically, you cannot sustain command performance after command performance after command performance, goal race after goal race after goal race. These are not tenable. It's not tenable. Mm. Everyone needs a season or a period of time where they break. At the pro level, because they make their living at it, what they do is they take windows of time. Now, the marathoners are a little different. We've got to put them in a different category. The elite marathoners, as you see with Kipchoge, they tend to run every cycle. But realize they're not doing anything else. Like, they're just professionals, right? And in that window of time between races, they're taking a fallow period. Anything that's going to be living, any living system needs a period of allowing the soil to go fallow. And everybody thinks that's a bad thing. No, it's actually where all the nutrients re-engage. If you keep plowing a section of your field, all the natural nutrients are going to be gone. There's no breakdown of the all the biological aspects that are going on. You need to let it, this back in the old days, they just let it sit for a while. And what you're doing is you're going into a fallow period. It doesn't mean you're not doing anything. It's just nothing that's going to produce immediate results. And you're not using that field to get some kind of immediate return on tulips or immediate return on corn or immediate return on some kind of command performance. And think about it. Many people are training in a very monocultural perspective. They're just farming this for the same exact product on the same exact land over and over again and not reinvigorating nutrients into the soil. And what you're doing now is, number one, you're going with joy and curiosity. That immediately it adds incredible amounts of really good compost to your soil mixture. And then you're saying, what's my weakness? That's what I told my athlete. I was like, so what are you not good at? Because we need to work on what you're not good at right now, because we're not going to be able to look at that in the last 2 years. In the last 2 years, we need to be focusing much more on what you're good on. So what we're not good at, we need to raise that up to the highest level we possibly can. So it's no longer a, so even if we don't make it a strength, we can at least make it not a weakness anymore. At least it can put us on a level even playing field to where you, but if you get to that point, just think about how much the water has risen for the boat at that point in time for future endeavors. So I think this is something that people need to recognize. I've always framed it in this idea of a practice, and that turns people off because they think, oh, I'm not pursuing. But I just want to say, in my model, the practice is the overarching vision of everything. The pursuit is just one small little period within the context of it. Because anybody worth their salt that I know is running. From the time they start running, they don't stop until either injury stops them or they die. This is unique. It's like, just like climbing. The climbing communities are like this too. You know, they just, when you do a solo activity that gives you so much return of endorphins, of endocannabinoids, of feeling like useful and varied in the world, you keep doing it. Even if you're not as talented as you were before or as fast as you were before, because it's your way of experiencing a body in real time, because we don't work the same way we used to work. We don't live the same way we used to work. So now we have to think about it from a bigger practical perspective. And everybody's like, but I don't want to do it that way. That's just because you've hired me to work on your particular pursuit process of getting ready for a race. But I'm just telling you, if you're anything like me, you're going to go through extended windows of time of getting fat and happy. And getting fat and happy is a really, really important part of being able to get lean and mean, right? Like fat and happy, you need periods of fat and happy to have periods of lean and mean. They don't, otherwise it's just, it doesn't work. You burn out. And what's gone on here is, as you've been searching post 220, your 220 goal, searching for that area, then you popped over to another command performance, which was trail running and getting in that direction. And now you're stepping back and going, wait, why am I really doing this? Because you have a practice, because you love to practice. And that in itself is a goal, because having an incredibly varied and useful and helpful practice, eventually, if you choose to go towards a goal, which, brother, just let's just pinpoint this point in the conversation, right? Like, you know, 20 minutes into the conversation, February 27th, 2024, Kobe Blundio will be running a command performance sometime in the next year to 2 years, right? Like, you're going to come back to a goal. You're not going to not be goal-oriented. It's just in your nature. But you need a period to allow it to go fallow, and maybe it will come back and maybe it won't, okay? But it doesn't matter. My guess is it will, because it's just the way you like to be Kobe in the world. But you also like to be Kobe in the world who doesn't have a goal and who can just go about jamming on a track in Verona or running on a long, extended, you know, 2 hour, 5 hour, 7 hour run in Chamonix, and then also not missing your nephew's birthday because you want to go to their birthday, but you can't because you're training so hard that you don't have any time to go do the other things. Like, that's just not good living. So anyway, that was a long diatribe just to say what you're doing is absolutely normal and natural from a living system perspective. But it's not normal and natural, and you feel some sense, I'm sure there's a tiny part of you that feels some sense of need to justify your choices. But you don't need to justify. You just need to lean into the courage it takes to do it, and then keep playing. Keep playing and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Because the things will spark where they need to be. And do you know how long it takes people mostly to find joy in weightlifting? That you even have a spark of joy that's in weightlifting? What a gift. But you know, it's kind of weird, like how your body told you what you needed. And you're, honestly, Kobe, think about this. Your future goal told you what you needed, whatever that goal may be. But right now the goal is, I just want to go to Chamonix and be able to jam with my friends. I don't want to be like way behind. I want to be I want to be useful and effective in doing what I'm doing in Chamonix, not because I want to run this particular event that's on this particular day in which I'm going to have some pressure on myself expecting me to run a particular time on that day. Instead, you're like, no, it just feels good to be good, right? But you, what did you reference? Oh, I need to lift. And then you get in there and you're like, oh, it's good. Why is it good? Because the body usually knows what it needs. This is a time for you to think about how the body knows what it needs.
I feel also there's always this beautiful, and in hindsight, it makes sense, right? In hindsight, it's like, oh, that's probably why I wanted to do that in that moment and that in that moment. So it's definitely something that I'm practicing. And that's really also leans into like the spiritual component of all of our conversations, is that on the surface level, this is about weightlifting. Like it's about building strength in my legs. But I feel like one layer deeper, this is about me just accepting and experiencing what I enjoy right now. And that just happens to be going to a gym, exploring what it means to lift weights and use all these machines and run on Stairmasters and stuff. And then another layer deeper, that's again, it's just about getting to know myself in different contexts, different environment. What does it trigger? What does it bring up? And so it's always this beautiful process of just always like somehow getting closer to yourself. And that is really, it's like in the movement, it's like in the move, I'm just envisioning myself now in the gym and I just go there. And this is just exciting. It's like an exploration. It's to your point about curiosity. It's like, I don't know what my body feels like when I'm in this angle using these weights. Oh, why am I weak in that spot? And not like constantly analyzing it. That is not the point, but it's like, I go through the movement and that's my experience of that movement. And the more I go through this movement, the more the experience just changes. And it's like, I don't know why I get so fascinated with these things, but it makes like very simple things much more special, unusual, and like beautiful. It's like, it's like some kind of depth that I don't always see when I'm stuck with, I have to do this goal, so I have to get out there and I have to do this workout, and I don't feel like doing this workout because I'm too tired, but I'm still gonna do it anyway. And so it doesn't have to be done in a disconnected way, but it's easier to catch myself like just in a rut of just doing what I should be doing, versus the playfulness of leaning into what seems to excite me or what excites me.
Well, let's explore one particular movement in one particular weight, one particular experience in a gym, and let's plumb that for its depth for a second, as a practical way of showing how the spiritual element can play through. And again, we're going to just reference, and if you want to know what we mean by spiritual, there are prior conversations that we've had around this. And what we're saying about spiritual is it's really hard to talk about, it's really hard to say, but you know it when you see it. And so we're just going to leave it there and let you decide what you see when you see it, okay? But Kobe, for you, when you experience, let's say, being on a Stairmaster or a particular lift or a particular thing you're doing, when you say curiosity, I think it would be really, really helpful for people, because you're deeply informed by your other experiences, your traumas around not reaching goals, and then your blissful experiences of doing these extended long runs on a trail. I mean, that experience of PCT had so many blissful moments of just opening, and even in the PCT, just micro trauma and bliss and micro trauma and bliss back and forth. What is it that's happening here in this small space, in a confined space filled with the vibes that you wouldn't really align with that super cool photo of you turning a bend on in Girona on a track, or your experience on a single track in the middle of, you know, Northern Oregon in the process of running the PCT. So I just want to bring this forward for people. It's like, this is always available. So let's talk a little bit about that experience. So maybe you pick something and say, what are you, and maybe we can break down how that's happening for people. What is actually occurring? And maybe, because we didn't prep this, Neither one of us knows where this is going, right? But it's more like a little bit of an exploration around, even in the least spiritual places, we can find quote unquote God, right? Like, oh, whatever that is, or that experience of whatever you want to call spiritual. How does that sound? Does that sound like we can go down that road, or are you like, yeah, no, this is some bullshit?
Yeah.
So maybe you just like pick one.
Good. I definitely am gonna give you my.
Go for it.
Yeah, I'm just gonna give you my experience of what that's like, and I'm also very curious to hear what you are referencing or what you would be experiencing, or maybe what you expect me to expand upon. We're having some connectivity issues, so I'm not sure if you still hear me, Steve.
Yeah, I hear you 100%.
Yeah, I think we, yeah, cool. So, because in my experience, I wouldn't necessarily say that I so much so experience God in my in the gym when I go through these exercises. Also because maybe my concept of God is evolving as we speak, which is definitely not a conversation for today. And so that's why I'm also very curious to hear how you would explain or how you relate to the concept of God in that experience of going to the gym. But for me, the spiritual aspect of going to the gym is really as simple as, I mean, and I like that you just really asked me to make this so specific and tangible, that I just envision myself for some reason all the time using, I'm doing like a lunge with dumbbells or kettlebells. See, that's how much of a noob I am in all this. And so what just really intrigues me about this is that as I go through my lunge, it's like I have, and I think it's maybe something I don't emphasize enough, or maybe I just assume people know, but I have a strong tendency these days to just immediately ground myself. I'm not trying to ground myself. I'm just so curious about what is about to happen in my mind and body as I go through this motion. Like, what is about to happen? And so let's say I go through this motion of going into the lunge. I notice that, oh, wow, initially when I hit the ground, when I need to stabilize my hips, oh, there's no stability there. Then I go deeper into the lunge. Oh, wow, my glutes really struggle. Oh, I start to notice this in my hamstring. Ooh, my quad is pulling. And again, not in this analytical way, but really more so noticing the connection that it has to my mind. As I go through this moment of instability, oh, that triggers insecurity in my mind. It triggers irritation in my mind. It's like, I don't like this feeling of instability. I want this to be stronger. Why are you so weak, Kobe? And that is really where, to me, the spiritual dimension starts to come in, as it is the dimension where you're just invited to be a quiet observer of this entire practice and to stay connected to why you're doing this. And that is the connection to the curiosity. I am just curious to see what happens when I do this, these sets and these repetitions, and how that dialogue in my head is going to continue to evolve. And also, the deeper I go into this practice, can I get closer, or just deeper and deeper and deeper, to the point where this conversation in my head doesn't need to affect me, it doesn't need to impact me, and I can just like leave space for the irritation, the feelings of sadness, maybe for feeling so weak, and the disappointment, or maybe even the overwhelm for, oh my God, this is going to be such a long process for me to get stronger. And that is all that experience, the experience of going through a lunge. And that is where, to me, that is where my spiritual practice comes in. Can I just create space around these stories? Can I create space around these insecurities, these emotions? And then, I'm just going to tie this one concept to it, because I can talk about this for days. This is really where my fascination with this entire process starts. That is, for example, where when we talk about the concept like patience, see, we go from this internal spiritual experience, we then try to describe it. And let's say I do this practice of going to the gym like week after week, or day after day, week after week, month after month, maybe even year after year, who knows, I have no idea. Then it's like, wow, this Kobe is a really like disciplined guy. He's really like patient. He sticks to the process. But my patience, when I really go to the core, doesn't come from my self-discipline. It more so comes from, well, self-discipline is one aspect of it, but not the way that I, that is, that we usually understand the word. The patience comes from the absence of being impatient, of not leaning into all the impatience. It's like, oh, I can just notice the impatience and just have the self-discipline to just let it run its course, to notice the impatience and to really like let it dissolve and let it unwind itself, decondition itself. And then after a while, I just noticed that, oh, now I seem patient, but actually because I'm so connected to this process, there's more so a lack of impatience than me trying to actively be patient in this process. And so, and being the quiet observer, there's a lot of these qualities that come forward. And that's obviously my fascination with spiritual dimension when I go to the gym. It's not that I just go and do a physical practice. I also get to do like a human being practice, like a personal practice. Who do I want to be in this world practice? Like with any challenge. Oh, this is hard. This makes me feel insecure. This makes me feel weak. Okay. Yeah, that's just the reality of the situation. The question really is, how do you want to go about this? It's not about, I want to be able to lift as much by next week. It's no. How do I carry myself through these challenges? How do I take responsibility for where I'm at right now? And so that to me is where all these qualities that get you closer into the spiritual dimension all come into being.
That's beautiful. Your spiritual practice, your primary practice, is an Eastern-based Vipassana meditation type mode, correct? Am I correct in that assessment? We haven't really unpacked this whole, we haven't unpacked that part, which at some point in time I would really like to, but that's okay. Today we're not going to. But I just wanted to give a frame of your particular spiritual practice and how that's relevant here, because I'm involved in many other practices that don't have that same value on noticing. I mean, let me say this. Let me rephrase that. Every spiritual practice values noticing. No spiritual practice worth its salt is not first embedded, embodied in a human being. And that requires noticing. But then there are varieties of other experiences that can come about if you don't limit your experience of the moment to just observation. And the Vipassana school is very much observe and let it go, observe and let it go. And eventually, as you have described, you're in a much further along on your path because you're now recognizing what might be called, I call spectrum, but other people might call yin yang, but every negative is the positive and every positive is the negative. Like you stated, it's not about focusing on patience as a virtue of some sort of future state to be in, but to note my current impatience and recognize its place in the growth I want to make or in the curiosity I have or the creativity I want to play out. Vipassana, there is no better attentional skill set. If I were going to teach one spiritual practice to people of the age of, you know, maybe 10 to 20, Vipassana would be our most important place to work because we're so unskilled at noticing, at paying attention, at observing, and having that distance, that create that space and distance to allow whatever our internal experience of things are going. So I would like to just keep it in this. I just want to note that for any other person who may be paying attention to this, where's Kobe coming from? I just wanted to give a little provenance around spiritual practices as they may play out. But there's a couple key things here that I want to just link in on. Let's talk about, I'm going to use the languages, the words you use. These are literally your words, okay? Noticing, paying attention, self-talk. And you did wonderfully focus on two aspects of self-talk. The negative side, which can be a negative space, but also the way that that could be then transferred from patient, like you said, from I'm not patient to impatience moving towards patience. And that's a self-talk. That's a dialogue, an inner dialogue. So in that sense, like, you're observing, but then because you're doing a physically embodied experience, I just want to make it clear, you're not doing pure Vipassana at this point. Pure Vipassana will not, you do not bring it into, you wait and you come off the cushion and then you bring it into real life, right? Mm. And you're bringing Vipassana into real life, and they do want you to do that, but they keep you in this little box to make sure your skill set gets really good. But your skill set is so good that you're already doing it. Like, you're already doing many of the most important parts of Vipassana. Not that I'm saying that that's all there is, but there isn't much more beyond that. They're not asking for bliss realm. They're not asking for anything. They're not moving to some other state. It is literally everything is right here, just right here in the observational experience. So then the last word you used was observation. So I just want to target this and say, if you want to next level your running from a physical, and not Kobe, but our listener wants to next level their physical and mental and emotional connectivity and responsiveness to struggle, trouble, trial, tribulation, pain points, and all those other things, what Kobe's describing around noticing and paying attention and having a third person observer experience, if you don't have that ability, you're significantly limiting your ability to problem solve in real time. So there's a super practical application here, which is it takes this ability, because if you don't notice, if you don't get a little distance, and then you don't have the ability to reframe self-talk, negative self-talk, and turn it into take a negative feedback loop and bring it into a positive feedback loop, just practically, your nervous system's going to get derailed. And I'm just sorry, whatever there is in service of ultimate reality of God or whatever there else is, that I can't speak to any of that. But what I can tell you is the thing that's the boss of you is your nervous system. This we know. And your nervous system is the way that you deal. And this mode, this observational third party distance, the observer, sometimes called the watcher, there's a lot of different terms. And it comes into, this is actually where we get the scientific principles that move many of at a critical historical juncture. Eastern modes of thought came in while the Western worldviews were getting pushed out, and science glommed onto the third person observer, and then they made it into a model, which now has become our incredibly valuable scientific protocols, which are to constantly be observer and refuse to be anything other than observer. But I do want to just state, so I just want to say, I am a huge fan of that, but it doesn't go far enough. Because what you then described was, where is the curiosity? So you brought curiosity in. So you just use this mode of spiritual experience to give you a deeper embodied, lived, and I just want to use this word because it's the exact opposite observer expression, messy. It's messy. Your instincts are throwing you 100 directions. Your emotions are throwing you 100 directions. And I know your concepts are throwing you 100 different directions. But for one little window of time, this little process of noticing and paying attention and getting some distance allows you to get the clarity about what's really real right here, right now. And what you've done intuitively, which is beautiful, is then brought it into the visceral lived experience of making that movement as effective and as appropriate as possible. Watching for the ways that you could beat yourself up or tear yourself down or hurt the scenario, not from that perspective of, but now you notice that you're no longer observer in that space. Now you're the experiencer. So this idea of objectivity is really important to know as a conceptual process. But I just want to state, as athletes and as spiritual people, I'm assuming that these kind of the people that might be interested in this particular episode, you are never not subjective. And no one ever is not subjective. No human being is ever not subjective. The entire construct of this idea of Vipassana and the idea of science is really valuable for us to conceptualize and get a little bit of distance away, because it's helpful to make us more appropriately embodied and subjective. But we are never not going to be subjective. So my spiritual path, you know, moving this direction to where I would go, very similar. I try to step out and I try to step in and I try to step out and I try to step in and I try to step out and I try to step in. And then eventually I just want the, if I can do it, I just want the I to go away. Eventually I'd like the I ego to just dissipate in the doing of the thing, and then allowing that doing of the thing to be its own thing. And that no matter whether I did three sets of 12 or two sets of four, or I failed miserably, ultimately at the end of the day, it was just a curiosity and creativity project about being embodied in my body. And eventually I might have a goal down the line to go do a thing that might help me. But ultimately right here, right now, what am I supposed to be doing is this. Because one of the challenges I find really, really hard for people, especially those of us who are spiritual, and I maybe this is just being a little bit older, but being is a future state. For most people, the way that they're conceptualizing being is always in some kind of future state. It's always some kind of goal, again, of itself. I think we need to really, really guard against this. I think this is something that is a spiritual, it's not really a bypass, but it doesn't really fit with wide open. I think of spiritual as open, completely open and responsive to the needs and the things that need to be there. And if I'm thinking about a future state, there's no way I can actually be presently embodied. I can't presently be here. So I think one of the things that is good is just to recognize this, that what Kobe just described here is distance and then engagement. Distance, getting a distance, observe, be objective, and then be subjective, and then be objective and be subjective. And because ultimately that objectivity will only be valuable in effective subjectivity in real time, not based on some future state.
Mm. So, and is it, it's in that experience that you find God? Because the way the way I understand this now, and it's very interesting to get this reflected back to me, is that I definitely have a tendency to, it's hard to not start to analyze as well. Like, so I get so, it's like an analytical kind of curiosity if I don't pay attention. Yep. So, and that's where then I slip into my head again and just like being almost like, oh, what is happening? And like thinking about it, and I'm already like fracturing the experience again. Whereas if I just go into the experience and I live the experience of feeling weak. I live the experience of being insecure. I live the experience of just feeling unstable. Then yes, that's also where I get closer to the zone. It's not about like analyzing every single muscle that is twitching and stabilizing that gets me to that zone experience. So yeah, it's like you just engage with the experience, and that's then also where I would say you find. Well, I mean, again, I get hung up on the concept of God here, and it's just a
let me unpack what you just said, and then I'll try to transfer it into God from my perspective, right? So the first thing I think is that it's important. The reason I highlighted the Vipassana mode is because it asks you to step away from. Have something you want
to
share?
It's like you need to have the, if you don't have the awareness that there's such a thing as stepping away, it's hard to lose yourself in the analyze and the emotion.
Bingo.
And the thought. Yeah, okay.
This is, it's a tool. It's not a way. Mm. It's not a path. Running is the path. Lifting is the path.
Yeah.
But our spiritual teachers, they're not doing anything other than trying to orient us towards our path, not the concept. But the concepts are useful because we're next level animals. I'm sorry to say it. No disrespect to all the people that I am. I mean, I'm a deep animal lover, but we are animals. I don't want anybody to get twisted that we're something more than animals. But we're doing something very different than any animal has ever done in any context, at least on this planet, right? So, but because of that, we're creating all kinds of disassociations. But all religious traditions are trying to bring us back to, all spiritual traditions bring us back to the embodied state in its natural state, which is impatient. So recognizing I have impatience, That's useful, bringing awareness to the idea and the concept. But the only way you're going to transition from impatience to patience is to be impatient, not by the virtue. This is a whole Western construct, is all about the virtue, to lean towards. This is all about this goal-oriented bullshit that we're talking about. Oh, if I just die some future state by a virtue, I'll lean towards some future space. The Stoics view from above. Then the night after they're done with their whole life, lived day, they go back and they go through their lived day. And yes, all these things are hugely are great. But we're actually already enlightened right here, right now, already done. It's already finished. There's nothing to do. It's already done. Kobe, we're already perfect in our imperfections. Your impatience is this body in this lifetime doing this thing right here, right now, under the construct. And if they can get away from too much distance is good, but too much distance removes us from the lived experience. Too much lived experience overwhelms us in such a way that we actually bubble out and do inappropriate things at inappropriate times that hurt us in ways that we can't even imagine and can't even conceptualize until we get a little more distance. And then we wonder, because we're fucking messy. But that's the project. My God is a God of growing intelligence, not growing creativity, constantly iterating towards knowing itself more, which allows for evil in its context. Of course it's evil, because if there can't be evil, it has to. It's also infinite evil, infinite good, iterating and iterating over and over and over again, like the Tao symbol. That's all it is. And ultimately it's going to be masculine and feminine energies generally. Now at the top, above it all, it's all one. But we are not in the one. And be wary of Vipassana or other, not Christianity, Vipassana, Zen Buddhism, of focusing so much on the process of the spiritual that you're not embodied in the lived experience of humanity. This is why I'm a fan of running, because running is a true path with heart. It's better than spiritual practice. Because all of that spiritual practice is supposed to be designed to allow you to be effectively human. And then maybe finding out what nature intends. That's what I would say God is. Nature. Human nature. Animal nature. Like, these are the things. This just, what are we doing? We're just going and going and going and going. And there's something unique. I mean, I've got dogs. I've had dogs all my life. They don't just, they do. They sit around for a while. But if you pick a ball up, or they've got a task to do, they're on it. They're ready to go. They have a purpose. Their purpose is to move and to work and to do something. Sometimes it's joy. Sometimes it's pleasure. Sometimes it's digging a hole in the backyard. Sometimes, you know, it's like, but it's all moving towards a thing. But as humans, we think the same thing, but then we think we're special and separate and different. I don't know. I could go off on for a long time on that topic. I could leave that alone and just say, as humans who have evolved a really, really advanced nervous system, our nervous systems are highly advanced. But we focus so much on the brain conceptual part that we don't integrate the brain or the mind, or the what we might call the mind up high, which is a central operating system. And all of our senses, most of our really critical senses that we value the most, as in the West especially, are up here. The mouth, the nose, the eyes, the ears, right? But we've got this other intelligence center in your heart. No one will ever deny that. Everyone knows the heart has intelligence. And then we also have the gut. And the gut is our animalistic instinctual space. And there are spiritual traditions that talk about these things. I don't really care about them, though. Again, those are all thoughts about what is unique just about being human. They're just thoughts about how to be effectively human. And I argue running and lifting and then thinking about a practice generally will give you opportunities to bring whatever worldview you happen to have and whatever particular process. I want to work on patience today. I'm not saying patience is wrong. I'm just saying in patience, you need to recognize there's always going to be patience and impatience simultaneously at the same time. Lean into whatever's there and explore what's going on and then move your body through it. And almost always, really, really amazing things happen. What happens is when we don't move through these concepts, they accrete into ideologies and they accrete into conceptual things that then people turn in to laws and rules and regulations that really do a great job of allowing us to be in larger groups, but they really destroy our creative and our curiosity aspects. And, you know, nobody did anything wrong here. Nobody's doing anything wrong here. But I do think this is just so important for people to recognize. There's nothing to do, but we do anyway. So be skillful with your doings, but there's really no long-term end except to be creative and grow, like creative and curious and creative and curious, you know? Anyway.
I feel I want to try to make this tangible, and I think it's very helpful because I think it's also why I found myself pulled into these conversations with you, because it's an opportunity for me to deepen into my understanding of all this. So what I notice now is that, like in the past, for example, when I wouldn't be doing strength training, well, there were two reasons now in hindsight. One, I didn't feel any genuine connection with it. And two, when I was in it, I was like, it was mostly triggering me. Like it was making me angry, frustrated, all of these things. So now probably anger, frustration, these emotions are still going to pop up. But so the way I understand what you're saying here is that the practice of, you don't grow more spiritual by trying to contain your frustration. You just realize that in allowing the frustration to flow and embodying the frustration, you move towards being less frustrated. You move into a different state of being. Well, you move to wherever it's going to move you. You don't necessarily know. Maybe it's going to be a different direction. And the freedom lies into just shamelessly allowing yourself to, I mean, I'm not talking about if you're frustrated to go punch someone in the face or anything, but to just like breathe, maybe not even breathe through the frustration, like just allow the frustration to trigger your breathing and to just make it bring up your heart rate, and just don't step in the way of that natural process that is happening. It just don't resist it, and also don't try to not resist it. It's just let it happen. Is allow yourself to be impatient, not make the impatience more. Don't try to make it less. Just allow yourself to be impatient, and that's where you find true patience in that moment already. Actually, now that I think about it, you immediately, when you stop resisting the impatience, you have found true patience.
Correct. Because you metabolized it.
Yeah.
Because you experienced it. You were curious. If you have a feeling state, you may have virtues that you utilize in your day-to-day life to help ensure you don't punch someone if you're really angry, if you have a problem with anger, right? So there's some balance there. And so that's the value of virtues, in essence, is to ensure that if we're going to go deeply into a feeling state, we still abide by basic rules and regulations that we want to accept as a society that likely you still feel, right? Because only a narcissist or a completely disassociated human being would get angry and think it was appropriate to chop down a tree or to punch someone in the face randomly, right? But we do have those feelings where we want to chop down a tree and we do want to punch somebody in the face randomly, but we have a little bit of structure there, like you said, to allow us some, to be sure we're abiding by the basic set of rules and necessary. But that we got so focused on that we then thought, oh, I can't be that, I can't have that emotion. And then our emotion has nowhere to go. So then it gets metabolized as, I'm just going to use this word, I'm not a scientist, okay? I'm not a medical doctor, but it becomes cancers. These become unattended pains, unattended feeling states that are not allowed to do their normal, natural thing. Kobe, I believe this beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the human body is the greatest success of nature. It knows what to do. The only way that the medical world has helped us is with major trauma, like car accidents and falling off of mountains and everything else. But all of that getting good at those catastrophic things. And remember, we don't have fate anymore. We lost fate. We lost that there was a purpose for you falling off the mountain. So whatever happened, so if you lost an arm, then it was always meant to be that you were not supposed to have an arm in this life, right? We had a context for that, which was religion or some kind of worldview that was connected in a way. But once we decided to get rid of God and get rid of fate and get rid of all those things, once you fall off a cliff, now you have no good reason not to try to figure out how to make sure that you don't die from that, right? So, but we've got so focused on that area, but that's the only thing our medicine does really well. Our medicine does not do cancer, anything else well. And what those are improper imbalancing of the gut, the heart, and the mind in a way that allows us to just allow the body to do what it naturally needs to do. Combine that with poor food choices, poor environments for general health and well-being. But you know, as athletes, anybody listening to this podcast, you're already meta. You're already way above the level there. You're already eating effectively. You're already exercising and getting out in nature consistently. You're already creating an ethical construct in which it allows you to. I mean, we're not talking to the whole world that be. We're just talking about a small little subset of group people that might be listening to this podcast. So you can allow, as long as you got some virtue in play, you can allow your body just to feel what it needs to feel. And if you do that, I promise you, you will get a return on investment that you have no idea what it is. And what will happen is, so somebody might say, but I don't know how to do that. So I'm lifting this weight and I get impatient. What do I do? Two basic recommendations. What's the curious thing to do? And what's the humorous thing to do? What's the curious part of you? And what's the part that will laugh at the impatient? What will laugh at the lack and say, this lack creates an opportunity for growth. This lack provides an opportunity to be more patient. This lack, and you stated this early on, that you noted that self-talk, you moved away from being patient to recognizing impatience as a part of the way, along the way to do that. I mean, just think about this from a spiritual perspective. If everything you did in your sporting life had this deeper connection of saying, how do I find the balance around the balance? How do I find the poles and then work within it wherever I am? And then how do I allow the body to just do what the body naturally needs to do and how it wants to do? So many things will clear up. Now, you may not have a particular pathway of how to make it right or to fix the thing. But again, just recognize that's a very late Western capitalistic idea to fix things. Nature doesn't fix things. Nature natures. Humans, human. Just be a human. And yes, if you have a catastrophic car accident and you have the availability of modern medical techniques to help fix you and put you back together, I'm not saying not to do that. And I'm not saying that somebody who has cancer should do something different. I don't want this to be misconstrued in any way. But we have many of the skills to heal our own, especially our emotional and psychological ills. I think even physical, but I don't want to step too far. I'll just say the first step is always recognition. And so that use of distance that you described, that position of observer, hugely valuable, but you need to then come back. I always say this, whatever you're going to do from a spiritual practice, if you go up onto a mountain, you need to then come back into a body. If you're going to go away from people, then you need to come back into people. You have to take it from the outer edge, from the territories, from the boundary line, and then bring it back into the body so it can be handled. I talked about this earlier before we started recording. The idea of metabolism is huge here. Just conceive of the idea of eating a food. Whatever that food is, what happens when you eat it is that it gets metabolized by the body to turn into energy. So the food itself is really not that important. It's important to us conceptually or from a taste perspective. But once it gets down our gullet, down your throat, it's getting put wherever it needs to get put. Imagine that. Just think about the miracle of that. Like, you couldn't, there's no human that could design a system that could effectively take nature and bring it in and make it nature again. I mean, that process, we take it for granted. We take our human experience, the experience of being a living system, for granted in such a way. And just this act of lifting weights, of doing a squat, can provide a huge number of opportunities if someone were willing to just pause for a second, observe, and then come back into the body and be curious and laugh. If you can't laugh, you're in deep trouble. You have to be able to laugh. anything that happens to you, any trauma, drama, challenge in your life, eventually you will laugh at it. I guarantee you. So learning to laugh now provides you an opportunity to open some space of constrict that you have constricted around your idea or concept of it, you know? And then it maybe opens up a space for you to then have more love or whatever thing you want to vibe on, whatever you're vibing on, connection, love, a particular virtue that you're working on, whatever you're going, whatever your spiritual path is. It's like, this is why I say, this is why I wanted to get in these conversations. Running is a path with heart. It's a metabolizer of experience. And it itself is not special, but it's just one of a few. And this is why martial arts, Tai Chi, yoga, these things, they are incredibly important for metabolizing, because we're not hunter-gatherers anymore, Kobe. We're not living in nature the way we used to. So we have to have these practices, these movement practices in our ecology of other practices we might have. Climbing is another one. And yeah, it's myopic and small and it's got a sport element. But more importantly, it's the only place we metabolize. All these concepts, we're swimming in concepts. Or we're swimming in mind, this upper brain space. Or we're swimming in our gut, which is instinctual. Or we're swimming in the emotional unrest. But we're not allowing ourselves to put all three in connection and see where it goes. And I'll keep allowing and allowing and allowing. And the running, I mean, I just read a quote that said, if anything bad is happening in your life, go for a run until you can't run anymore and it'll probably be fixed. I mean, you and I know that's a little bit naive and a little bit facetious, but we've all done it. It's all happened. It almost never do you have a major challenging situation happen that if you don't go out and run for a period of time that you don't at least feel a little bit better about when you get done. So it's like, why not use this? Why not consistently use it? And yes, lifting is running. In my book, lifting is running, because it's all a part of an ecology of this practice movement that you're doing to try to effectively move through space so you can enjoy Chamonix or enjoy the local road race that you're running in, or just enjoy the free movement of a 60-minute run along wherever in the countryside or in the city or wherever you're at. Like, it's these things are right there for us.
Interesting. Really, really interesting. It's makes me think of a couple of things. First off, what you were saying about being on the mountaintop and then also learning how to come down again, it's confronting time to it's I don't know, it's just really confronting for me to hear that, because I feel that's definitely something that I have not been aware of, something that I mean I have been aware of it I've come aware of it a bit more over the past, but like only in bits and bobs. And I just feel how important it is for me, because it's where I often lose my sense of connection to everything. It's like, I feel I start to realize that I'm losing. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I can't be in this environment because this is not like blah, 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 my energy. Maybe there's a certain component to that. Like you don't have to, like you can choose where you are, right? But it's also, to me, there's a lot of beauty in just accepting that you, when I come off my mountain and I just come back down, then there's a lot of environments I can just be in. It may feel a little challenging because I'm not used to holding my energy or my frequency yet myself, but I don't have to be put out of the frequency because of my environment. And that is where I feel I still have, I don't know, I'm just going to go with emotions. And these are my words right now.
Yeah.
But my observer is noticing things and judging things. But it's, that's where I notice that I still have quite some work to do in integrating this part and just being humble again, like just allowing myself. I am part of all this. I am not above this. I'm not below this. I am in all of this. And there's a lot of beauty. And I feel this is the exact process where I've just learned a lot. There's a lot of things that I've come to know about myself that I didn't know before. And now I feel like I'm invited to just step off my mountain and experience that I can grow as a human being regardless of my surroundings, and I can be connected to anyone wherever they are in their journey. And that's it's a liberating thought to have, and it's definitely something that I want to experience more of. I want to embrace more of, because I have such a bad tendency to make my life so hard all the time and always like try to do the next spiritual thing and to do the next challenging thing. And honestly, I feel there's also such a big part of my life that I'm just yearning to learn how to keep things simple and to find my specialness and the specialness of life and the most normal and mundane things. So stepping off that mountain, that's really why that lands. Yeah,
well, you're here.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah,
not on the mountain. This conversation and your willingness to go to a vulnerable place is how you share these kinds of ideas with people. Mm. Because what we've done in the past is pretty conceptual, and we've done the best we can to then bring it into a way that somebody could take into a practical way. But Kobe, I just want you to recognize that what you just shared right there is what makes this particular project you and I are on really important. We don't have the answers. We just have questions, and we're not afraid to keep showing up. And I just want to, I know you've had a really challenging, difficult recent few months, and I just want to honor, and I want our listeners to honor that you're here and that you're willing to continue to explore these areas, because these are the ways we are creative and curious and learn. I've been working on a project with a group of people around a book we're reading. And, you know, it's just, we know this idea that, you know, we don't ever really, I think people recognize intellectually that we never really learn from our successes. Or it's really hard to pull the learnings out of success, because what we're dealing with right there is just the felt sense of all the hard work we did. So when we succeed, we don't really want to go into a conceptualization and an observer position around the success. We want to be in the success and feel it, right? But when we fail, we very frequently do the same thing. We don't recognize what's going on. And I'm not saying that anything here is a fail, but that sense of lack in you is really just opportunity. Your being on the mountaintop and having experiences on the mountaintop need to be, as I use the analogy, metabolized here. And the way you do that is through conversation with people who hold the space that's safe for you to do. That's not me. That's our listeners. That's the podcast you've worked so hard to create, the podcast I'm working hard to create. This is what we're doing. This is the real work, Kobe, not the practical application of the conceptual arrangement around how you might do this and how it might play out. I will continue to do that because that's what people pay for, right? But what they're really getting is this. And some people will turn this off right now. They'll be like, I don't want that heart. Yeah, well, okay, bye. But the people that I know that I'm in contact with, they recognize this as what they're really craving and what's missing, especially in our running culture. It's really missing the willingness to even say something is spiritual, and then the willingness to be vulnerable in your learnings and your space, and you know, from the perspective, I know it'll sound maybe for people who have been listening to us this time that I'm all full of advice and I'm some sort of like got all these ideas. Listen, man, I don't. I'm wrong most of the time. I'm wrong a lot of the time. I'm not trying to say that I've got answers. I don't. But I do have some hard-earned experience being a human and being a runner and coaching humans and runners. And I do have a unique point of view. Not that it's right, wrong, better, anything else. It just is what it is. I'm just trying to be as vulnerable as I can be around it, which is I'm not right. But if you resonate with it, this is not coming from some conceptual place. This is lived in me, and mostly through many, many experiences feeling exactly what you're feeling right now or what you were articulating earlier and trying to figure out how you can figure it out faster. Brother, you're not meant to figure it out faster. You're just meant to be. Just to keep, again, beware of being. Beware of being. It has a little bite of the future in it, which is typically reacting to a past that's not helpful. Unless it gets metabolized in the in the active presence of your being, like Ram Dass, you know, the guy who ever, the hippie dude that everybody taught. Be here now. There is no greater mantra for the human species, especially the modern Western human species, than to be here now. That's it. That's all there is. Now, good luck on being here now. That's really hard, but I think that's what we're doing, right? Like even having this conversation. So I just want to reflect back to you that you are currently not on the mountaintop. You're with us around a campfire having a conversation about your experience. And as you go through the next 6 months, 3 months, 6 months, you'll have more and more to bring back from us, because all the things you've gone through recently have brought many learnings to you, many learnings you haven't metabolized quite yet. And that just takes time, and it will. And you'll be all right. And we'll all be better for your experience, because then we can live it. As long as you continue to stay open and willing to show up like you are, then beautiful things happen. Or messy things happen. I actually think the idea of order, complete order, is not very natural. I just think we're just nature-naturing. Humans are purely and simply nature-naturing. When we drive our cars, we're nature-naturing.
I feel that a lot too. I notice it, for example, in my tendency. There's a couple things. I notice that in my tendency to want to like plan out podcast conversations. And I know this in my true nature, I don't plan out podcast conversations. And it's not because, oh, I'm this wizard that's just really good at making things flow or anything. I just feel when I try to explain something really hard, I just like the way I communicate it is like completely opposite of what I'm trying to communicate, right? I'm trying to communicate in my words, let it go, be natural, blah, 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 all these things. And then in the way I communicate it, it's like, I really try to structure it and I really want you to understand it. It's like, actually, that doesn't make any sense. It makes so much more sense to like to riff off of a topic and to be honest and true to where I am, whether that's where my perspective is at in terms of what I would say to someone who also wants to walk this path, whether it's where I am in terms of where I'm walking in my own path. And that's where, when I was sharing earlier, I also noticed that I wasn't standing on the mountain, and it still makes me very emotional to notice that quality in myself. Because I'm going through this phase of feeling really bad about things I've done. And I notice it not helpful. It doesn't help myself. It doesn't help anyone involved. And that's also, I'm grateful to notice that I'm not, in that moment, I noticed I'm not this kind of jerk. I'm also just, I'm also just a guy trying to figure things out, making terrible mistakes, and hoping to, I don't know, process them or metabolize them, and maybe get at some point being able to laugh at them, but it's not really quite clear how that is going to come about from where I'm standing right now. So yeah, but it feels much better to be in that place of just figuring things out together, just not pretending that I know it all and stuff. And yeah, so that's something that landed. There was probably something else, but now I kind of lost track of that.
Well, nothing ever No one wants to hear it will get better when you're not feeling well. It's a truth. So what I'll share with you is the natural course of living systems is to metabolize energy. And we privilege positive energy in our system because our system's so fucked up. It doesn't recognize death, doesn't recognize suffering, doesn't recognize despair, doesn't recognize depression, it doesn't recognize any of the quote-unquote bad energy. But nature gives no flying fucks. It just metabolizes energy. And you are energy, and you're having what might be described as a negative experience, but I don't think it's a negative experience. It's a requirement of your upgrade of whatever metabolizing of whatever choices you've made. And brother, I have made horrible, way worse choices than you have made. I've been around too long to not have made major worse choices than you made, that I felt exactly the same thing. But standing where I stand now, would I change some of those things? Yes, with wisdom, with greater clarity, maybe. But I would not be the same person if it hadn't happened exactly the way it was going to happen. Now, is that fate? No, I don't know. I don't know the ultimates. I don't think we're supposed to. We're just supposed to be here now. So when you feel this, you feel it. And I'm not saying you feel it, because sometimes people take this the wrong way. Like, oh, I get to just feel whatever I want to feel. But you're not immature. You're not immature. You're just growing. And the process of maturity, becoming a whole human being, means you need to metabolize bad stuff. I read this book that changed my whole world. It's called something, I can't remember. The author's name is Christopher Bosch. He talks about extending and doing many LSD experiments, lots and lots of them. But he was a very sober, focused human being who was really, really good at, he's a professor, and he did all of this very quietly and never shared anything. He did it for 20 plus years and never shared a word to anybody in the world. But what he's done now is write a book about his experiences. And the one thing he says over and over and over again is that what we're doing as a species-wide across the world is metabolizing much of the bad energy. And it's the process, it's the work of our time. Even as we're creating it, we're also processing it. And there's more of this bad energy in the world. He has a much more sophisticated nomenclature for this, much more sophisticated language. I'm just dumbing it down. But I'm saying what we have happening on a micro level is also happening on a micro level. It's just part of what the process we're going through. We all know this. Everybody understands it. And I'm not saying it's special. Maybe many, many species have gone through many, many other short choke points, these kinds of really painful points that we're in. But it's clear that we're all processing grief. And it's clear that that grief that we're processing is playing out in other ways. And it's clear that we just have to live through it. And so it does help sometimes to recognize, even as the experience is negative or bad, it's an essential part of your personal growth, for sure. I think you probably recognize that. But this guy, Christopher Bache, is arguing for a much larger system-wide, species-wide metabolism. That even the Earth is metabolizing all of our poor choices. And because of that, the metabolism will meet, something new will be created. Something different will happen. It will. Because if that's what metabolism does, it takes one thing and turns it into another thing. And then it produces energy. That's just the way that goes. So just trying to honor your emotional experience is the most amazing thing you can do, is just allow it. And not in a way that impacts other people and creates more negative energy, but more along the lines that says, hey, what you're feeling grief about, you fucking did, right? You did. Whatever's causing you grief, whatever that is, you did. Well, you have to metabolize it. That's the only way it clears out for the rest of the population. Because if you don't metabolize it, it's going to go out and spread out into the whole world one way or another. The way you interact with other people in the world, the people who are close to you, the people that are further away from you, like you are amending for it. This is the law of karma. Like you are, that is what karma means. It's that there's energy we put out and we have to eat our energy. And runners, we get this. We understand it. And running is another way to metabolize it. That's why they talk about it as being so useful, because that energy could get used in some kind of positive way. But key here, Kobe, to bring this circle, this thing potentially full circle. I'm sure you're going to have some things you want to revisit in just a second about this. But to bring it full circle for where we started with this conversation, but you can't have a goal. You cannot have a goal for how that, whatever that energy is going to do, whatever it comes out as. It might come out as gold. It might come out as poop. Who knows? It might come out as real good energy. It might come out as feces that needs to get re-spread out into the universe to try to compost our future situation, right? But you, if you try to take that metabolism and goal-centric, nature doesn't do that. It's the purpose, the goal, the meaning is already baked into the whole project. It's already baked into nature. Nature's already processing it. It's already taking it, turning it into fuel. And then it has a byproduct, and that byproduct we'll all be working with and dealing with. Now, I don't have a model here. I don't have a perfect conceptual analysis. This book rocked my world this past summer, and I'm still working in terms of metabolizing it. And I don't really do psychedelics anymore. So to me, but I have done them in the past. And so reading this was just like, oh my God, this is, and this guy, his journeys to me, it's like, he's at least as valuable as many of the other spiritual teachers we have out there, because he's taken it the long way. I mean, he started this project in 1977, 78, and finished it in 1998, and then didn't publish his work until 2018. So he's like that's sober. That's not, I've got this answer to the world that I'm going to go share out into the whole world. He never thought he was even going to put it out into the world. But anyway, that model that I'm arguing for, I think is basically the way nature works, especially a spiritual nature. It's because there may be no point to it at all, except that the point being to continue to do. And that seems to be as real. And I think even your people who are more along the atheist, secular atheist bent will agree with me there. We do seem to be feeling this need to continue to iterate and iterate and iterate and iterate. We have this desire in us, in our loins, to create babies, and then babies continue to iterate it, and it just keeps happening like this. And we're not alone. We're not alone. Animals do it. The plant world does it. The mycelial network is doing it. They're all doing it in different ways. But this is the story of the Earth. The story of the universe is continuing to do this. So you're just in play. Be here now just allows you to be this small process of you metabolizing your grief and more, maybe some of the grief of the universe that's your allotment to metabolize. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Who knows? Nope.
I feel all of our conversations are going to have this tendency where we start from this, we try to ground it. We made an attempt, right? It was an honest attempt. And then we zoomed all the way back out. I don't know how we got here, but it was an interesting conversation. But I was thinking about bringing it down 15, well, bringing it full circle like 15 minutes ago, like trying to shoot for stopping now, but still. So this is maybe like an abrupt end, but I feel like it's been an intense conversation for me as well, knowing where I'm at. And I just loved it again. I feel more and more connection to, it's more so like giving insight perhaps, and just when we go into that space, like where I feel I'm at right now, I'm just speaking from that place of not trying to speak anything in particular, and just like speaking how I feel, truly feel about things in this moment. And I feel that has a transmission as well, that communicates stuff as well. And so I feel that that's just how I would like to continue to have these conversations. And just to close it off, would have to bring it back to our initial topic of just setting the goals and where I'm at in my process. I feel honestly that just being honest about that is really where that was the most important thing for me. And as soon as I stopped resisting the fact that I didn't have a goal, all of a sudden everything turns just joyful again, and I could just go into the process and go to the gym and enjoy picking what gym I want to go to and blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden it's a joyful process again. And it's like, the more I connect to that process of just being in something, like even now with the grief, I notice when I'm in the grief and I allow myself to be grieving, then it's liberating. It's a liberating yet very daunting and very unsettling experience still, but it's also liberating. And I notice I'm progressing. I don't know where I'm progressing to. I don't know what the purpose of all of this is and why I had to do things the way I did them. But yeah, there's so many layers to this, man. And I just, I don't know. I feel like maybe the listeners, by listening to this and more of these conversations, I'm sure that they're just, when they'll know when they know, they understand what we're talking about. So I don't maybe want to try to over explain things or like over complicate things conceptually, just bring in the concepts when you feel like bringing in the concepts, and then just leave the concepts for what they are when we don't want to use the concepts. So,
well, thank you for the opportunity to talk
for this conversation, Steve.
Yeah, and thank you. That's what,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
this is what I'm here for, is the conversations. The concepts, cool. The concepts, yeah, tend to come through one way or another. But the feeling, there aren't enough of these, the podcast world or whatever it is we're doing, I just continue to think, mm-hmm, of it as conversations. I have a particular, mm-hmm, avenue with which I try to disseminate concepts and practical and input for running. I do that. But I have another gentleman that I do these kinds of conversations with. Ours are much more industry-based, but we do get into many of these same topics. But you allow for a level of depth that I can't get in any other place. And so as long as you keep showing back up, I'll keep showing back up. I can promise you that.
Beautiful. Yeah, cool. I enjoy these as well. And it makes it really beautiful that I don't know, it makes them really relevant for where I'm at personally as well. And that again adds another dimension. It's something I really enjoy. So thanks for that.
You bet.
And yeah, let's try to schedule another one next month, right?
Let's do it.
I can only try.
Yeah, well, what you can do is just send me your calendar, you know, in the next day.
Hold on, we're still on the. We're still on, so we'll have this conversation in a second.
Okay.
Thanks for being here, Steve, and talk to you next time.
Okay,
and
bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye bye.